Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 19th of January. One of our program yesterday, we spoke with the chair of the Democratic Party in the state of Wisconsin, and we looked at the recall election, which will take place, barring some really unforeseen circumstances with hundreds of thousands of votes not being eligible for the recall, but there were a million signatures, and it will mark the first gubernatorial recall election in Wisconsin history, only the third one in U.S. history. We asked for a Republican to join the conversation for a full hour today from Wisconsin. Our top-notch producers of this show had invited members of the Wisconsin GOP, the Republican Party of Wisconsin, and members of the Friends of Scott Walker organization to take part today, offering them the whole hour of the program. We said we would be happy for any individual to join us for part of the program, but neither group was able to find someone to join us for all or part of the program today, which is unfortunate. It's not that our producers didn't do their job. They did. So we have gone nationally to find our guest, but he's from Wisconsin. So does that count? John McCormick is our guest, staff writer for the Weekly Standard, who grew up in Baldwin, Wisconsin. For those of you who don't know where that is, it's between Menominee and Hudson. And he has written about Scott Walker in a recent piece for the Weekly Standard. A couple articles recently, Walker's Vindication, and also a piece on collective bargaining, a couple pieces on that. He has been covering the national story as well, and there are a couple national stories we'll ask him about today. The news that Rick Santorum finished 34 votes ahead of Romney in the new Iowa tally. They don't know how to count their votes, I guess, in Iowa. And the votes from 8 precincts are missing. So that's that story. And it would appear that Rick Perry is dropping out of the race in about an hour from now. We'll be welcoming phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Hello, John.
Hi there. How are you?
Fine Irish name you have, sir. John McCormick.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for being with us. Now, why don't we start with before we get into Wisconsin, let's just briefly start with the news about Rick Perry. Are your sources saying that he's going to drop out in about an hour?
Yes. All the sources I'm seeing right now indicate that Rick Perry is about to drop out and endorse Newt Gingrich right before the South Carolina primary, which will take place this Saturday.
Mm-hmm. And also, what in the world is going on in Iowa? It sounds as though you can't really count on what the vote was.
Yeah, you know, in Iowa, it's completely run by the state party. It's run by volunteers in the state, and people should have realized this. The campaign should have realized this. The state party should realize this, and moreover, political reporters, myself included, should have been saying the night of the election, there's no way we can know that this is correct, because as we've seen in the Wisconsin, in the Minnesota Senate race in 2008 with Al Franken and Norm Coleman, these votes shift. And in Iowa, they don't even have the ballots still there. They're basically just going back and checking the numbers and rechecking. And one point to make about those 8 precincts for which they no longer have results, Santorum was ahead by 30 or 40 votes in those 8 precincts as well. So even if you did add those into the count, I think that would still indicate that Santorum was ahead. But with the race so close and without any opportunity to do a real recount, I think that it really is. All along, it was. We should have said it's too close to call. But the media storyline, I think we all got it wrong coming out of there, was that Santorum or that Romney just eked it out, when in fact
right.
It was just too close to really call, given how it really isn't professionally run and there was no opportunity for a recount.
Yeah, you can't have 8 precincts missing. Can you? I mean, you just can't do that.
Yeah, no, it looks so bad. I wonder if this will hurt Iowa's position as the first in the
right.
nation caucuses. I think after people seeing this kind of amateurish show over there, there might be some calls to remove its first in the nation status.
Right. I think you're right. It'll be interesting to see how that story plays out. On to Wisconsin. The first gubernatorial recall election in Wisconsin history no doubt will take place. We know not when. What do you think of the number of signatures that were gathered? It's a million people in Wisconsin who aren't very happy.
It's very impressive. You know, the state remains divided. It's very polarized, as we saw in the last two elections, with the state Supreme Court race between Justice Prosser and Joanne Kloppenburg, which was, you know, just by the narrowest of margins in favor of the, I guess you'd call them conservative. And then again in the state Senate elections, where Republicans lost a couple seats but ended up narrowly holding on to the majority. So Wisconsin, I think the line in Wisconsin is that Wisconsin continues to remain a 50-50 state. It was that way in 2000, and it was that way in 2004, where the Democratic presidential candidates won very narrowly, and then we saw Barack Obama win by a great margin. I believe it was at 13 points or 11 points in 2008. And then Scott Walker came back and won by 5 points, and now we kind of see it reverting to a 50-50 standstill with both sides very polarized.
What do you think of the governor?
Me personally, I am an opinion journalist, so I think the governor has done a great job. I think he's a good man. I think that the collective bargaining reform made a lot of sense. From my reporting on all this, the biggest thing that struck me is how people don't even, the most basic facts that I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about what collective bargaining means. And what collective bargaining really means, it means union veto power. It means that once something is agreed to under a contract, the union has authority to say, oh, you want to reduce our health care benefits? No, we're going to veto that. You're going to have to find the money some other way. And how does that usually happen? It usually happens by firing the people who are the most recent hires. So, for instance, when I was talking to people, you can go check out this article. It's called Google Walker's Vindication, the Weekly Standard by John McCormick. And I talked to some school district members. You know, I talked to this woman. She was she was from a school district in southeastern Wisconsin.
Emily Cozella.
Yeah, Emily Cozella. Emily, I was going to say Emily Koala, but I know that was a former Democratic state rep. At any rate, she said that she's a Russ Feingold voter. You know, she voted for Feingold, she voted for Walker, a typical Wisconsin swing voter, and she said she was going to have to fire upwards of 28 teachers had these reforms not gone into effect. Because the way the union always works is, typically, I mean, some unions can take these cuts and some have, obviously, but the whole idea of collective bargaining is that they don't have to. It gives them the authority, the final veto power over it. So that's my understanding of collective bargaining. I think that that's an untold story, that Walker's reform actually saved teachers' jobs. It generally saved the jobs of people who were most recently hired.
Mm-hmm. There was a huge cut taken by education in this state, and a lot of districts are complaining that they just don't have as much money. There have been programs cut, and there have been a lot of teachers who have retired. Do you think that's part of the dissatisfaction? Is that legitimate, that education was cut and we can't afford to do that, the UW system as well?
Well, from my understanding, education is the biggest part of the budget. And, you know, when this whole debate was taking place last spring, the teachers' unions said that the money is not the issue. You know, we'll take these 5% cuts and this 12% in premium. We'll take the 5% payment of our salary towards pension and the 12% of our premiums toward health care. It's not about the money. It's about our rights. Well, if it's not about the, is it about the money or isn't it? I mean, I have friends who are teachers from back home, and yeah, for them it is about the money. It is a real cut. And I understand that completely. If I had $5,000 taken out of my paycheck, I would be upset, and I would be inclined to vote against that, maybe the person. But I think if you take a broader view and realize that Walker's reform helped save jobs for teachers, that's great. And in a couple places where the reform hasn't gone into effect, that would be Milwaukee and I believe Kenosha and Janesville, where they locked in these collective bargaining contracts prior to the passage of the so-called budget repair bill, you'll see hundreds of layoffs because they haven't agreed to the 5% and the 12%. That, in fact, when when Mary Bell said that she was making a promise on behalf of local school districts that she couldn't really make, that at the end of the day, collective bargaining rested in the hands of the local arbitrators for the school district, and it took this law to remove that veto power from the unions.
Do you think, though, that teachers should have to take a big hit here? Do you think that they're overpaid, that they're getting more than they should, they're getting more than other people are? It's almost as though teachers have been vilified in the state.
You know, I think that's really unfortunate if that has happened, because I love my teachers from my small town and public school in a little town. You know, it was Baldwin and Woodville, this town of 2,000, a town of 1,000. I had great public school teachers. I wouldn't be, you know, for my parents and my teachers, I wouldn't be where I am today writing at a national magazine. So I hope teachers make even more money. I think that this was probably necessary given how much of the budget was for education. And what it really was is the law, the budget repair bill, really was it made authority go to the local level. So different school districts can handle this differently. I mean, I've seen some school districts have implemented, they save so much money just by switching their health care providers, because there is the union health care system in the organization that was founded by the union, and by just being able to compete and go out and bid for another health care contract, getting basically the same benefits, some school districts are saving hundreds of thousands of dollars. So I think in the long run, this reform will be good. I think it will save jobs, and I think it will lead to Wisconsin being good. I mean, I think that at the end of the day, the market will work itself out, that people in individual towns don't want to have bad schools. I know in my town, people don't want to have bad schools. I know it doesn't make up for what they lost, but there was a $500 Christmas bonus that the school voted for in Baldwin, Wisconsin. Just reading my local paper.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. No, but I don't think. I mean, it's unfortunate. I don't wish in an ideal world. I don't think that should have had to have happened. But the question is, if not them, then where does the money come from? If we're missing $3.6 billion. Basically, what was it? $900 million came from reduction in state aid to local schools and local governments. And that, to me, I mean, given the percentages of what the budget is, that seems to make sense, because if you don't do that, it's got to come from higher property taxes. And right now, Wisconsin has had a 0.03% increase in property taxes. That's the lowest increase in property taxes statewide in 15 years, I heard. And I think that right now, when other people are struggling too, I mean, there are people who are working in factories, people who are laid off, people who don't have jobs, and you know, I don't know if we should be asking them to pay more money in property taxes when teachers weren't paying anything towards their pension, and now they are.
What about jobs? The governor ran on that issue, as you well know, John. Do you see signs that the economy is picking up in Wisconsin?
You know, I'll be perfectly honest. I've been so caught up in this national election that I don't want to pretend that I have a good insight into the economy in Wisconsin. From what I had seen a few months ago before I was running all over Iowa and New Hampshire and South Carolina, was that compared to neighboring states, compared to Illinois, for example, Wisconsin was doing relatively better. And I believe I've also seen that there has been like a net increase in public education hires. If you subtract the firings and the retirements, I think there's still a net increase in even public education jobs in Wisconsin. So the economy all over the country is doing poorly. I think that there were seasonal reasons for Wisconsin losing some jobs in the past few months. But let me just be perfectly honest, say up front, I have not looked at the numbers closely, so I'm not going to pretend to know what I'm talking about here.
And let's just talk about philosophy for a moment. It is troubling to a lot of Americans, I think, that we no longer sit at the table and hash out our differences, that this recall election is going to be huge, huge amounts of money. There are people who won't appear on certain people's air because they think they won't get a fair deal, which, they go to certain people who agree with what they have to say. We listen to the people who we think will share our particular viewpoints. I mean, it's really a partisan, nasty kind of environment that not only exists in Wisconsin, but it seems to be existing nationally. What do you make of that? People don't like it.
I agree. Yeah, I mean, I've always been for civility in politics, and I think that that's what the president campaigned on in 2008. And I personally, as a conservative, think that he hasn't lived up to that. I think he is going about and demonizing and vilifying his opponents, just as any politician has. I really was struck by the amount of vitriol at these protests in Wisconsin. I think that there was, this is all just speculation, I think there was a backlash in Wisconsin. You know, in Ohio, there wasn't nearly the kind of takeover of the Capitol and the angry protests there. You know what they did? They just went out and they fought it in the election. I mean, there was maybe some anger about this, but in Ohio, the unions won. And granted, it has a stronger union, a history of unions, but I think that there may have been a backlash, actually, to the anger and the sort of occupation of the Capitol that took place. And I think it was a mistake. I think that if they had just, you got to learn how to take a punch in politics. And I think that the left in Wisconsin did that poorly you can't control what everyone does at these protests, but when you have a protest go on for a month or 6 weeks or whatever it was, you're going to have a lot of people who just end up saying some really nasty things. And I think that probably hurt them. I think if it hadn't been for that, if they had just quietly moved on to recall elections, a state Supreme Court race, if they had just won, you know, an extra few thousand votes in that state Supreme Court race, Walker's Law would probably be gone. I don't know for sure, but that state Supreme Court sure seems divided as well between liberals and conservatives. And if there had been an extra liberal on that court, I would suspect that law would not be there today.
And what about the governor? Would you advise him that he should do things differently in any way?
I would say early on, I think it would have been a good idea if he had maybe done more town hall meetings like Chris Christie from New Jersey. He's got these famous videos of, you know, really confronting average voters on a day-to-day basis. And Walker obviously did a lot of speeches, was all over the state, but I don't think he really engaged voters. And he was probably too worried because it had already become so nasty that he would have just been shouted down, as he is now. I mean, he goes to these things. He goes to something like a Special Olympics or a Martin Luther King Jr. Day speech, and he gets harassed there. People don't like that. Average Wisconsin voters don't like that, I don't think. I think that if there was more civility on the other side, I think that they would be better off. I think that they would be a lot better off if they gave him a break every now and then. I don't think that dogging him and hounding him to every single place he goes to speak is appropriate. And I think that there is a backlash against that.
John McCormick is our guest this hour, staff writer for the Weekly Standard. We are talking about the Democrats filing 1 million signatures for a recall of the governor. Yesterday, we had the chair of the Democratic Party. You can rest assured that the invitation went out to the chair of the Republican Party in Wisconsin. They said no. Members of the Friends of Scott Walker organization were also invited and asked to take the whole hour of this hour, and they said no. And we are delighted that John McCormick said yes. He is from Wisconsin. He is a staff writer for the Weekly Standard and has written several articles about Scott Walker and collective bargaining. He's been spending the vast majority of his time covering the Republican presidential primaries. And we'll ask him about South Carolina because he spent, I believe, last week there. So we've been looking at that as well. But we thank John very much for being civil and being with us. This is the, I got to give you the phone number again, 800-486-8655. And the email is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Just a reminder that on Monday, the South Carolina primary is Saturday. On Monday, we will have our All Things Political Focus on the results of that race. A professor and chair in the Department of Political Science at Clemson University will be with us, and we'll also have a guest in the Department of Political Science from the University of South Carolina. Hour two of this show, the Scientific American January issue, has a darling baby on the front, and the title piece that we'll be talking about is The Pathway of Youth, New Insights into the Body's Anti-Aging Control System. Let's go to phone calls. Jonathan McCormick, staff writer for the Weekly Standard, is our guest, and we start with Grace in New Glarus. Hi, Grace.
Hello, how are you today?
All right, Grace, how are you?
Doing pretty well. It's a gorgeous day out there. We're supposed to get 4 to 6 tomorrow.
Oh, terrific. Gorgeous. Wonderful.
Hey, I don't agree with a lot of John McCormick's politics and all, but I do have to respect him for coming on the show. I think anybody who is considering voting for Walker in the upcoming recall election needs to consider the fact that neither he nor any of his staff nor any official of the Republican Party or the Friends of Scott Walker is willing to come onto your show, which is an extremely balanced show. You always try to give both sides of the issue. That these people are not willing to face the people of Wisconsin And also that Scott Walker, half the money that he's raised so far is coming from out of state. So what does that say about his support here in the state? I mean, he obviously doesn't have the overwhelming support in the state that he claims to. And I can respect someone, well, differing in opinion from them, but this just shows an utter lack of respect for the people of the state of Wisconsin.
Thanks for the call, Grace. John?
Well, on the issue of campaign finances, I would suspect that the out-of-state unions are spending a ton of money as well. In terms of Walker's support in the state, from my sense of what the polls are showing, is that Walker is probably under 50%. But I think you're going to see the same thing happen in Wisconsin as you're going to see happen on a national level. That's what always happens when an incumbent is up for election, is that the opposition wants to make it a referendum, and the incumbent wants to make it about a choice and a contrast between what you've got and what you're going to have. So you're going to see right now, I think the biggest problem for Wisconsin Democrats and union members and opponents of Scott Walker is that they need to find a good candidate. They're seeing somewhat of a similar problem on the Republican side, is that Republicans think they have this great opportunity at the national level to go ahead and beat Barack Obama because he's under 50% with his approval rating. The economy is not doing too well. There are some people who really don't like a lot of his policies. But Republicans haven't really been able to find a good candidate right now. Mitt Romney has his own problems as being a former moderate. He's flip-flopped on some issues. He's the guy who came up with RomneyCare, which is on the state level very similar to Obamacare, the biggest issue hanging around the president's neck right now. And I think you're seeing the same thing in Wisconsin. And maybe someone could come out of the blue and help them. But right now, what's the choice between Tom Barrett, who lost to him already, who the unions don't like, Kathleen Falk, who's going to be painted as another Madison liberal, rightly or wrongly, I think probably rightly, and Dave Obey, who is known for being one of the most, what's the nice word to say, crotchety congressmen in Washington,
D.C. He's smart, though.
He's a smart guy. So I wouldn't rule it out. I mean, I think as we saw with Joanne Kloppenburg and David Prosser, it still ended up being a 50-50 race. And both of those candidates have their strengths and weaknesses. So I think no matter who the candidate is, it will be a close race. I've always said that. But there's no real person who's going to come in and unite the Democratic Party. What I would say the model for the Democrats would be some liberal Ron Johnson, some guy out of the blue. Ron Johnson, the Wisconsin senator, who's just a businessman, came in there and beat Russ Feingold. Didn't have a lot of baggage, wasn't a typical politician. But we'll see who they come up with.
Well, enjoy the weather, Grace. And thank you very much for your call. And pretend, I know this is a stretch, but pretend for a moment that you are a Wisconsin guy who became a Democrat and not a Republican. If you were looking at this race, who would you try to convince to run? Would you really try to convince Russ Feingold because he would win this? Who do you think could win it, and who would you try to convince to run?
Well, I mean, Feingold's already said no twice. I always thought Feingold would probably be the strongest candidate for the simple reason that he has won before. He kind of has that maverick persona. I mean, 2010 was a bad year for Democrats. He lost. So I don't know. I mean, that was my sense. I'm not some great political thinker, but I mean, he was clearly the guy who could have walked in and just wrapped up the Democratic primary, whereas right now you might end up having a contested Democratic primary that's going to take the attention off of Walker for a time, and where there'll be some debates and some squabbling on the Democratic side, and that's not the worst thing in the world. I mean, Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton did that all the way to June of 2008, and Barack Obama went on to win, and Republicans are having this right now, and you hear a lot of Republicans concerned that, oh no, they're beating up on each other, this is going to hand Obama the election, but we'll see. I think that maybe that's people worry too much about there being party infighting during the primary, so I think that might not be a huge deal for Wisconsin Democrats.
Joan in Milwaukee, hi.
Hi. We've had a very good state health care plan to help the low-income people in Milwaukee. I'll try to keep it short, but I heard on the radio this morning that our governor is vindictive. And he is refusing to take an initiative kind of grant to plan health care. I have forgotten the word that's used, but for health care initiatives, ideas, how to get a little more of our health care money out of the hands of insurance companies. And Kathleen can help me in the name of this, but these initiatives, but he is going to throw the money back in the large millions.
Yeah, it's something like $38 million. I could be corrected on that, but the governor is giving the money back to the federal government, not going to work on setting up exchanges, health care exchanges, believing, and the governor is not with us. The invitation is out there, Governor, but believing that the health care reform bill will be overturned. John, you want to respond?
Yeah, I've looked up in this too closely, but I know that other states have also not spent the money for the president's health care law we call Obamacare. I think it's because there's just a contrast of visions, you know, something that I've seen that Paul Ryan speaks so well about. If you get Paul Ryan on, he'd do a better job than I can of talking about this. This is, you know, his bread and butter is health care. And, you know, the review from the opponents of that law is that it's going to make health care worse, that what we need in health care, health care has got a lot of problems right now. Why are costs so high? It's because there's no real competition right now. There's no real market in health care. And that's just why there's a different view from people who are conservative or independent and oppose Obamacare, is the view that rather than having the government take a greater role in health care, begin to mandate that all health care plans must cover all these different things, that we should have different plans competing against one another, and that we believe that Obamacare is a step in the direction of more government in health care, which already has a big role, and just that it's not good for the state or for the country.
And yet, what about the role of the president? Because he is the president, and it is the law of the land right now. I think a lot of the problems in Wisconsin, which is some of them started with the whole money for the high-speed rail, too, and that money was turned back to the federal government, and other states picked up on that. And so some of the concern here is that we're part of a country, too, aren't we? Aren't we part of a country?
Certainly. But, you know, the law is what the law is. If the law says you can give back the money, then you can give back the money. I believe what it says, and I would have to double-check this myself, but I believe the law says that the federal government can come in and set up its own exchange, or people in the state can buy into the federal exchange if the state doesn't set one up.
Right.
Because the state will be required. The state will be on the hook for a portion of the money. That's the whole idea, is that if you take a certain, you've seen this happen in other states where, yeah, you get an offer of federal money, but with that federal money, you have to pledge state money too. And so that's how they get you on the hook. And that's kind of what a lot of people are trying to avoid, whether it's high-speed rail or health care funding.
Let's go next to Carrie in South Milwaukee. Hi, Carrie.
State money too.
Carrie, you want to turn that radio down?
Carrie,
I'm sorry, Carrie. We'll put you on hold, and we have to turn the radio down. Luba in Madison, hi.
Hi. I have a question regarding the teacher affair. Would there have been such an uproar if those who had superior financial positions had also taken a hit?
Meaning the people who make a lot of money?
Yes. Or is there something in the law or whatever that makes their salaries
sacrosanct,
untouchable.
Okay.
In terms of, I think that was, when this law first passed, I thought that was a real big vulnerability. You hear, it polls very well, is let's tax the rich more. I don't think that works. I just think that if, in terms of, it'd be nice to see, why do these rich guys deserve all this money? Maybe they don't. Or maybe they do, but at the end of the day, I just don't think it works. I think if you want to start taxing people at the higher ends, you end up hitting a lot of small businesses. In Wisconsin, a large percentage of Wisconsin small businesses, they file as individual tax filers. So if you want to raise taxes on people making more than $250,000, you're going to hurt a lot of small businesses. So that's just why I don't think it works at the end of the day. I do think as a matter of politics, you're seeing the president do that right now, talking about the 1% and the 99% and how the rich need to pay their fair share. I think that polls very well. I think that the rich are paying their fair share. I mean, the top 1% contributes 40% of our federal income taxes. So I don't know, should that be even more? Do we want these people just to go overseas? Because at some point, people start saying, well, if I'm only going to get, you know, 40 cents for every dollar I earn at this point, why keep going for more and more?
Here's an email from Diana in Eau Claire, who believes that you have mischaracterized the school district that gave out a $500 Christmas bonus as having plenty of money to spend. The school board president of that district has apologized for calling this already budgeted pay adjustment a Christmas bonus. And she also writes, the number of school districts faring better financially under the governor is minuscule versus the number of those losing tens of hundreds, some millions of dollars in revenue. Please review the easily accessible data from the Wisconsin School Board Association, the Wisconsin Alliance for Excellent Schools, or the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction.
Well, I never said that the school districts weren't losing money. That was the whole point of the budget, was that there was going to be a $900 million reduction in state aid to local schools, and that to help local districts absorb those cuts, you had to pass this collective bargaining reform so that they could implement this increase in pension pay and health care pay by the unions. And the unions, what they said, they swore up and down that this was not about the money. We'll gladly take the 5% on pensions. We'll gladly take the 12% on health care premiums. And then lo and behold, in some of the school districts where they didn't have the collective bargaining reforms in place, in Milwaukee and Kenosha and Janesville, the union said, nope, we're not going along with this. And what happened? They lost that state aid, and they ended up firing hundreds of teachers. So that was a choice. That was a choice that they had. And Scott Walker dealt with this on the local level in Milwaukee. He understands this from a very, as being a county executive, he knew that that's how many unions acted. Because why do unions act like that? Why do the union bosses act like that? Because they're protecting the people who still vote for them. Yeah, they can fire 27 teachers, and then they can blame those firings on Scott Walker, and then they protected the benefits for everybody else. So that's why you had to get rid of collective bargaining on benefits, because as long as you had collective bargaining, the school districts had veto power.
We have an email from somebody who disagrees with you on that, Doug, who says that matters previously subject to collective bargaining, which excluded many management rights and management decisions, are resolved via mutual agreement, or if not, were subject to neutral mediation and arbitration.
I'm just saying that that's not the way it actually worked. I mean, who's the arbitrator here? I mean, the arbitration always benefited the unions, and I don't have the exact means by which that always happened, but it's a fact. I mean, if it's founded by arbitration, then what's going on in Milwaukee? Why is Milwaukee not? Did the arbitrator decide? I mean, clearly that seems to be stacked in favor of the unions. If the places where collective bargaining is still in effect are the places where they're one, not agreeing to any of these pension payment increases, and they're firing hundreds of teachers, I mean, that doesn't seem like a very fair arbitration to me. It seems like it's stacked in favor of the unions.
John, I know there have been movements in other states to move to more right-to-work states. Do you think there's a role for unions these days or not?
I think especially at the local, I mean, in the private sector, unions can't, they have historically done some good. I think that even FDR, you know, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, said that he was opposed to public unions because they're effectively negotiating against the taxpayer. There isn't that kind of labor and management give and take. And if that unions can simply vote in the people to give them greater and greater benefits and greater pay, that's not really that fair and that necessary. So I think the unions have historically played a role. I don't know. I think even in the private sector now, you're seeing them costing more jobs. I think that they're hurting the typical union worker. I think that unions have their own interests. You know, we talk about big business. I think we should also talk about big labor, that they are, you know, they're also enriching themselves, and they have their own agenda that isn't always in tune with. I mean, for example, in Milwaukee, you had basically a teacher of the year fired a year ago because this was before Scott Walker even was elected, that she ended up losing her job because there were budget problems. And in Milwaukee, they decided that they were going to fire, and it wasn't fired based on merit. It was fired based on tenure. Is tenure fair? Why should public sector workers be the only people immune to merit hiring and firing? I understand that people like that. I would like to have a job secure where I knew that basically absent some huge malfeasance on my part, that I would keep my job. But I don't think that young, good teachers should be the first to be fired. And that was another thing that Scott Walker's law ended up rectifying, is that now individual school districts, I mean, at the end of the day, this is all about local control. You know, local school districts, they have the choice to raise taxes by referendum. And teachers can go out and make the case to their fellow citizens. You want good schools? Then let's raise taxes by referendum. So I think that that could happen, but I think that that should be decided at the local level. And that's what Walker ran on, a pledge that he was going to balance the budget without raising taxes, and he balanced the budget without raising taxes. And now we'll see if voters like that enough to keep him, or if they want to throw him out and put in someone who will raise taxes.
Bill in Madison. Hi, Bill.
It never ceases to amaze me how people who grew up in the same culture, speak the same language, and are essentially, I guess, well-meaning people, can have such wildly different views of the world. That said, the only I respect what this guest is doing. He has a lot of courage coming on a show like this, and he's doing a very good job, but the only place I think he's been deliberately disingenuous is when he characterizes collective bargaining as veto power. Collective bargaining is simply a means for people on the bottom who never used to have negotiating power over wages, working conditions, or anything, to negotiate on an equal footing with management, who has, you know, 747 loads of lawyers and buckets loads of cash to oppose anything that workers think is just. And I mean, he sounds like another Republican who wants to repeal the 20th century. I mean, does he really think that the world was better off, you know, during the days of the robber barons and no unions? I mean, come on. I mean,
all right, let's get a response, Bill. John.
I would say, let's be very clear here. We're talking about government unions. We're not talking about private sector unions, where you have, again, as I said, the wealthy management versus the union, the labor force. You have basically people negotiating with elected officials who they elect, who they can elect. So I don't think that you have that kind of the same disparity there. Right now, teachers can appeal to, you know, who their management is. Their management is their voters. In my town of 2,000 people, their management is the school board, which is elected by their fellow citizens. And if their fellow citizens want to spend more on teacher pay, which I'd be all for, I think there should be merit pay. I think that the best teachers should be making over six figures. I really do. And people will say, well, that's not what Scott Walker has. You know, that's local control. Let local cities decide and spend, you know, and have the authority to fire bad teachers and to have real competition. And I think that if you don't have so much of this money, and here's another problem, is that unions always chose, and this is the problem, this is the deeper problem with our country and our tax code, is that unions always chose the tax shelter benefits over extra salary, because the way our tax system is structured, someone can give you $10,000 in pay, or they can give you $15,000 in pre-tax benefits. Either way, at the end of the day, you're going to get that $10,000 in pay or that $15,000 to $18,000 in health care benefits. And people would always choose the greater health care benefits, obviously, because we have our health care that is not taxed. So I think this is a deeper problem. This goes back to the 40s, that we have this tax shelter for health care. It would be nice if we could transition to a free market tax credit system where no matter where you were, everybody got a tax credit. You wouldn't have to be worried about losing your job and losing your health care. So that's just a broader issue that kind of gets the heart of where this problem is with teacher benefits and why they've just grown and grown over time. And we have so many other problems with health care that the costs just keep getting higher and higher, that I think this is a great means to get to a better reform where people can be more competitive, where school districts can be more competitive.
An email, it's never been addressed on this program, that civil employee unions are nothing but a straight-line funding source for the Democratic Party. That's really the only issue for Democratic politicians.
I think for some union bosses that was the issue, and that's why you heard them say at the beginning, oh, this isn't about the money, this is all about our rights. And that was another part of Scott Walker's law, was that their union dues weren't automatically taken out of paychecks by the state. And my question is just to anyone out there, why is that fair? Why should the state of Wisconsin force people to begin unions? Shouldn't that be voluntary? If people think unions are good for them, they should join unions. There are plenty of people who will choose to do that and plenty who will choose not to. But I just think that's a simple matter of fairness. And furthermore, if teachers are taking a cut in pay, then they'll have the opportunity to say, I mean, really at the end of the day, I mean, weren't people subsidizing these unions by having this money taken directly out of there? I think that it's good that people now have the choice whether they want to be part of a union, spend upwards of, what, you know, $800 a year in some places on union dues. So I just think as a simple matter of fairness, that makes a lot of sense to me. That should be up to the local school districts and up to the local unions, and each person should have that choice whether they want to be in the union and have union protections or they don't. I don't think that the state of Wisconsin should take that money out of their paychecks. I don't think that's fair.
John McCormick is our guest this hour, staff writer for the Weekly Standard, who grew up in Wisconsin, in Baldwin, Wisconsin. We're talking about the recall and the many issues that relate to the reason for the recall. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. And let me repeat, this is the only that I'm aware of media outlet in the whole state of Wisconsin that allows anybody to speak to people in the state of Wisconsin. And there have been previous governors who have used these microphones to speak to everybody. We certainly welcome the governor to spend an hour with us talking with you or the counterpart of the Democratic chair, the Republican chair of the state of Wisconsin, to be with us and talk about all of these issues. Okay. Just want to make that clear. More phone calls in a moment for our guest, who has spent, to be fair to him, we thank him for being with us, and he's also spent a good chunk of the last couple months following the Republican presidential primary, because he's a writer, national writer for the Weekly Standard, but he's written about Wisconsin as well. I'm Kathleen Dunn. The number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Returning to phone calls, Randy in Key Wascom. Hi, Randy.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. I'm somebody on the other side. I'm a small business owner, and listening to these union people complain incessantly about losing a little bit of income. I lose income all the time. In the last 8 years that Jim Doyle was in power, being a small business owner was akin to getting gang raped. Fees went up, taxes went up, the Democrats basically gave the public unions the ability to more or less bargain with themselves to give themselves more. And it always came down to the taxpayers having to pay more so they could get more. Now, I hear the unions funneling through all these people. Oh, these evil businesses are getting tax breaks. Well, businesses pay much more in taxes than what these union members do. I pay my taxes as a business rather than an individual person. I have to pay for unemployment insurance and the withholding taxes and for workman's comp. I'm not eligible for workman's comp or unemployment if I'm driven out of business like the Democrats have tried to do in the past. And basically, the unions have gotten to a point where they're so overly powerful. Your guest talked about the big union. Yeah, and that's who's funneling, pushing this. AFSCME and SEIU are national, and they hate the fact that they lost power in Wisconsin, and this is an all-out effort to beat down somebody who stood up to them so that this does not happen again in the country, that they keep their unbridled power.
John.
I think that the unions obviously this is a huge battle for them. Obviously, you know, early on people said, well, what happens in Wisconsin, so goes Wisconsin, so goes the country. What happened in Ohio shows that isn't necessarily the case, that each state will be different. But I think that the unions think if they can beat Scott Walker here, that they can it can at least scare off other states from doing this. And but I think this is all part of a broader issue that the country is going to face, which is, you know, we're spending more money than we have. I mean, even Wisconsin's deficit is something like 1/1,000th the size of the federal annual deficit, and the federal annual deficit keeps on growing and growing. So the question is, where is this money ultimately going to come from? And you know, this is just only the beginning of the problems we're going to face if we're ever going to come to terms with our debt. And the question is, I mean, is it going to come from higher and higher taxes? Are we going to go towards a European-style state where we go from right now 20 cents every dollar is spent by the federal government to maybe 40 cents every dollar in the next generation? You know, that's a choice we have to make right now. Do we want to have fewer benefits? Will we curb the union power, reduce aid, or will we try and do it by taxing people? And I just think that taxing people doesn't work. I think the taxes are plenty high already. I think that if you try and tax the quote-unquote rich, you end up hurting jobs. People, if it's in the state, if you try and raise taxes in Wisconsin, people will go to a lower tax state. If you do it in the country, people will end up doing business in Canada. Canada's got a much lower corporate tax rate than the United States does, and I think we really need a real reform across the board in the state and the federal level to come to terms with our fiscal issues.
Thank you, Randy, very much for your call. We go next to Mike in Stillwater, Minnesota. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just had three quick points. To piggyback on the last caller, I'm also a small business person. I've never paid lower taxes in my life. That person should get a new attorney and a new accountant. I'm actually, I mean, it benefits me, but I'm actually mortified at how low my taxes are as an S Corp. It's far lower than it had been when I had been an employee in various companies over the years. So, to me, that's just a bunch of nonsense. We live in a culture, and we're either going to collectively support the culture that we have, or we're not. And if this comes to an increasing balkanization of this country, you know, so people can have an increasingly little bit more money to buy goodies, what's the point of all that? My second point, real quick, is just I feel like there's a lot of misrepresentation by omission. Your guest mentioned earlier that in reaction to Walker getting 50% of his funding from out-of-state sources, that the unions get money out-of-state, give money from out-of-state. Well, of course they do. But the question is it 50%? Now, I don't know the answer to that. But I know there's a lot of misrepresentation by omission, which is a real problem. And then finally, in terms of healthcare, the way that healthcare companies make money is to bring in more money than they pay out in benefits, essentially denying care, which is it's a rationing system. So this whole point about, you know, single payer being rationing it's a false dichotomy. There's rationing going on every day. I work with patients every day that get rationed. And so the point is, and this is really an ethical and moral issue, as a country, do we want to be denying care at the expense of profit?
All right, John.
No, I don't think we want to be denying care. I mean, that's the deeper critique of Obamacare is that it's going to lead to rationing. It's going to cut back on Medicare. Obamacare is simply doubles down on this single payer system we've already got without ever hoping to introduce some sort of element of competition in the free market into there and to actually bring costs down. So no, I don't want to deny care. I want to keep And the only way we can avoid denying care for current seniors, the only person whose plan doesn't touch current seniors is Paul Ryan. As much as that plan's been misrepresented, his plan keeps it the same for everyone, and then for the next generation, 55 and younger, me included, people who have more money, they're going to get a bigger voucher, or people who have more money are going to get a smaller voucher, people who have less money are going to get a bigger voucher, essentially a premium support, and you'll go out and plans will have to compete for people, and there will be no denial of coverage. Anyone with a pre-existing condition can get a plan, and I think that we have to go in this direction. If we don't go in this direction, you're ultimately going to have what the president has in his plan, which is the independent. It's going to have rationing, where you're going to have bureaucrats who are going to have to decide what gets covered and doesn't, because you're either going to have Medicare just completely overwhelm the entire budget, or you're going to have rationing, or you're going to have some element of the free market to bring costs down. And for my money, for my own personal benefit, for the benefit of the country at large, I think that the free market, some element of that needs to be introduced to really save the healthcare system.
Thank you, Mike, very much for the call. In 15 seconds remaining, the South Carolina primary is Saturday. Is Newt Gingrich giving Romney a run for his money?
He really is. A couple days ago, people wouldn't have said that. I think Newt Gingrich had a strong debate performance on Monday night. There are a few new polls out today that show it neck and neck, momentum heading in Newt Gingrich's direction. And you're seeing Rick Perry, the Texas governor, who is really taking a tumble in the polls, but still could probably help Newt Gingrich out with a few points.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to endorse Gingrich, according to reports.
In probably about a minute.
About a minute.
Yeah. John, I deeply appreciate your being with us. Please come on the air with us again. Thank you.
Anytime. Thank you.
John McCormick, staff writer for the Weekly Standard. We extend, of course, a continuing invitation to the Republican Party of Wisconsin, the chair of the Republican Party, to be with us as we continue what will be many shows during this very, very highly charged political season in the state of Wisconsin. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for on-air production in our studios here in downtown Milwaukee. We have news coming up, and we'll return and learn how to live to be really old.